If you think back to like when you were in school, everything was just so neatly chopped up into these 45-minute blocks. You had biology at 9 a.m., and then, the bell rang, you walked down the hall, and suddenly you're in history at 10, and then maybe computer science after lunch.
Right, yeah, you close one textbook and you just open another.
Exactly. And it subtly trained us to think that knowledge lives in these completely airtight boxes. Like they don't touch at all.
It creates a really compartmentalized map of reality. We sort of start treating the universe like a giant filing cabinet, assuming that the rules governing a computer processor have absolutely nothing to do with the rules governing a forest ecosystem.
But the real world doesn't actually have a bell that rings between disciplines. And I mean, that brings us to the mission of today's deep dive. We are exploring this really fascinating concept of, well, what happens to our understanding of the world when we finally take a sledgehammer to those artificial walls?
Honestly, it is arguably the most critical question we face right now, especially when you consider the sheer complexity of the global challenges in front of us. And it's really the driving force behind the source material we're looking at today.
Right. So today we are diving into a platform called Thinkiverse. Specifically, their Danish site, thinkiverse.dk. And the core philosophy driving all their work is that the most valuable human insights, they don't happen safely in the center of a subject.
No, they happen out at the edges.
Yeah, exactly. They emerge where completely different fields and ideas and perspectives just collide. And they've mapped out this massive interconnected web of data covering everything from like astronomy to psychology, artificial intelligence to ancient herbs.
And looking through how they connect these totally disparate data points, I mean, it forces a massive reframing of how we solve problems.
It really does. So I want to pose this directly to you listening right now. What if those neat little categories we put knowledge into are actually the very things holding human progress back? Like, what if the answers to our most complex, seemingly impossible technological problems have already been solved by nature and we're just, I don't know, too blinded by our arbitrary borders to see them?
I mean, the moment you stop looking at technology and ecology as competing forces or even, separate forces and start viewing them as intersecting data sets, the entire landscape just shifts. We start realizing that we don't always need to invent a solution from scratch.
So let's look at a really specific collision that Thinkiverse highlights beautifully, the intersection of biology and technology. They feature these deep dives into how ancient botanical knowledge intersects with modern medicine, like in their article, Ancient Herbs, Modern Miracles.
Yeah, that was a fascinating read.
But there is one specific example they use regarding agriculture that I honestly just can't stop thinking about. It's an article about the secret role of bats in slashing our dependence on chemical pesticides.
Oh, the bat. The bat is basically the ultimate case study for why our compartmentalization totally fails us.
Right, because think about evolution for a second. It is essentially this massive 4 billion year old open source R&D department. Mother Nature has been running trillions of random, relentless trial and error experiments.
Just ruthlessly optimizing.
Yes, optimizing for survival, energy efficiency, and balance within very strict environmental constraints. So when you look at a bat, you are literally looking at millions of years of perfectly calibrated pest control engineering.
But humanity tends to equate the word progress with the word engineered.
Right.
We have this underlying, almost arrogant assumption that if a solution is created by humans in a sterile laboratory, like if it involves complex chemical synthesis and a patent, it is somehow inherently superior.
Right, we want the shiny new thing.
Exactly. We look at our own highly polluting, incredibly fragile technology, and we call it advanced. And meanwhile, we view nature's highly optimized, completely free biological solutions as primitive.
I do have to play devil's advocate here, though. Let's, look at this practically. We don't use chemical pesticides just because we hate nature or because we have some weird psychological bias against bats, right?
Sure.
We use chemistry because of scalability. Like, if I run a massive agricultural operation, I can synthesize 1 million gallons of a chemical pesticide in a factory, load it onto a fleet of drones, and just treat 10,000 acres in a single afternoon. It's predictable.
It's predictable, yeah.
It's measurable. It's instant. You cannot mass produce 1 million bats on demand and force them to patrol specific GPS coordinates. So isn't our preference for engineering just a simple matter of speed and scale?
Well, you were hitting on the exact trap of tunnel vision right there. Yes, the engineered chemical solution is faster and it's highly scalable in the short term. But let's actually look at the mechanism of that chemical spray. When you douse those 10,000 acres, you aren't just killing the target pest.
Right.
You are carpet bombing the entire local ecosystem. You decimate the soil microbiome, which means the crops can't absorb nutrients as well.
Oh, and which then forces you to engineer and apply synthetic fertilizers.
Exactly. You're creating new problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then that pesticide runs off into the local water table, causing toxic algae blooms in nearby rivers.
Which requires massive, publicly funded water treatment facilities to clean up.
You see where this is going. Furthermore, the pests that actually survive the chemical spray pass on their resistance.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, next season, you have to engineer an even stronger, more toxic chemical.
It's just this cascading chain of highly expensive engineered patches.
Precisely. Now, contrast that mechanism with the bat. The bat is a closed-loop system. A single bat can eat thousands of insects a night, targeting the exact pests that threaten crops.
Oh, thousands.
Thousands every single night.
Hmm.
But it doesn't stop there. The bat's waste, guano, is one of the most nutrient-rich, perfectly balanced natural fertilizers on the planet. So it actively repairs the soil microbiome.
That's incredible.
It is. It maintains the insect population at a balanced equilibrium rather than trying to, you know, eradicate it entirely, which actually prevents resistance.
Yeah.
And it does zero damage to the water supply.
But because the bat isn't a scalable engineered product manufactured in a lab, the agricultural tech sector just ignores it.
Completely ignores it.
Which naturally brings up the real underlying engine driving this preference. Like, if the biological solution is objectively better for the long-term survival of the system, why do we always default to the quick, destructive chemical fix?
I think we both know the answer to that.
Yeah. As I was reading through the Thinkiverse data, connecting their categories on pollution, sustainability, and finance, the through line became just incredibly obvious. They highlight this concept they call greed's legacy.
Right.
And it makes you realize that the primary driver here isn't just human hubris, it is the profit motive. You can patent a synthetic chemical molecule. You can patent the drone that sprays it. You can build a subscription model around synthetic fertilizer.
But you cannot patent a bat.
You cannot patent a bat.
It's so true. Economic models operate in perhaps the most isolated, heavily fortified walled garden of all. Modern finance is structurally incapable of accounting for ecological value unless it can be commodified, you know, packaged and sold.
Right. It needs a barcode.
Exactly. The bat provides an invaluable service, but it does it for free. It doesn't generate a quarterly return for an agrochemical corporation.
So the free natural solution is marginalized simply because there's no billing department to send an invoice.
And because of that isolated economic thinking, we just pour billions of dollars into massively expensive, highly complex technological workarounds to solve problems that nature has already solved.
There is a perfect example of this in the energy sector data on the platform. The article on the challenges in scaling up power to X, we all know we need to transition away from fossil fuels. And one of the massive technological pushes right now is this power to X thing.
Right, e-fuels.
Yeah. The basic idea is taking renewable electricity like wind or solar and converting it into other forms of energy like hydrogen or synthetic e-fuels. And, you know, it sounds incredibly futuristic and clean. But when you actually dig into the mechanics in their FAQ of how hydrogen conversion to e-fuels works, the inefficiency is staggering.
Oh, it's brutal.
Right.
You are fighting the fundamental laws of thermodynamic at every single step of that process.
Right.
To make an e-fuel, you first have to take renewable electricity and use it to split water molecules in a process called electrolysis to get green hydrogen.
Right.
That step alone loses a massive amount of energy as heat.
Just gone.
Just gone. Then you have to capture carbon dioxide from the air or an industrial source, which also takes massive energy.
Yeah.
And finally, you synthesize that hydrogen and carbon together under extreme heat and pressure to create a liquid fuel.
Sounds exhausting.
By the time you actually put that e-fuel into a machine, you might have lost 50 to 70% of the original renewable energy you started with.
So we are building these sprawling multi-billion dollar industrial infrastructures, bending over backwards to engineer these wildly complicated, highly inefficient chemical processes to pull carbon out of the air and turn it into energy.
Yes.
Meanwhile, a tree does exactly that, pulling carbon from the air and converting it into stored energy via photosynthesis at ambient temperature with zero energy loss for completely free.
We are constructing mechanical, highly inefficient lungs while simultaneously bulldozing the real, perfectly optimized ones.
Wow.
And we do it because the mechanical lung represents an emerging market. It has patentable technology, venture capital backing, you know, profit margins. The forest is just viewed as idle real estate.
And when you divorce technology from ecology, and you divorce both of those from the realities of physics and long-term economics, you end up with systems that create as many crises as they solve. the engineered solution causes a secondary problem.
Which then creates a market for another profitable engineered solution to fix it.
Exactly. It is a self-perpetuating loop of complexity.
And that loop leads to a very precarious edge. If you follow that logic to its extreme, if you look at what happens when technological advancement and the profit motive are completely stripped of any biological, ecological, or philosophical constraints, the data gets quite alarming.
Thinkiverse maps this out extensively in their sections covering security, weapons, and AI. They have these articles on the unethical use of artificial intelligence, AI chatbot disasters, the emerging role of rogue AI in cybersecurity, and this one is just terrifying ways to outmaneuver armed robot dogs.
The irony of the robot dog is terrifying when you put it in this context.
It really is. Yeah. Because we ignore real biology, like the bat or the forest, when it can actually help us sustain the planet. But then we turn around and build an armed, four-legged security drone.
Right.
We mimic nature's brilliant mechanical design, the balance, the joints, the low center of gravity of a canine chassis, but we strip out the biological conscience.
Completely.
We copy the mechanics, but leave out the empathy, the fatigue, the need for calories, and all the natural ecological constraints.
Because evolution builds in fail-safes. A real organism has physical and biological limits, which naturally prevents it from consuming or destroying its environment entirely because, well, if it did, it would die.
Right.
An armed robotic system or a weaponized artificial intelligence has absolutely none of those constraints. When we develop these technologies inside a computer science vacuum-like, intentionally excluding disciplines like philosophy, ethics, or historical sustainability, we are generating world-altering power without any natural checks and balances.
It is pure, unadulterated capability without a conscience.
Thinkiverse does a brilliant job of placing these catastrophic risks side by side, actually. For instance, they feature highly objective, impartial data on the environmental catastrophe risks associated with facilities like the Bushehr nuclear power plant.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
They don't take a political stance on nuclear energy at all. They simply present the engineering and geographical realities.
Right. They are just mapping out what happens when a highly complex human-engineered system is placed in a volatile, real-world environment.
Exactly. And when you look at that map holistically, you see that our most severe existential risks, whether it's a nuclear plant failure, the collapse of a climate system, or the deployment of rogue AI, they all share the exact same root cause.
Which is?
It is the hubris of believing we can control infinitely complex, interconnected systems using narrowly focused, isolated engineering without respecting the broader web of physics and life.
So how do we find the off-ramp here? Like, if the purely tech-driven, profit-maximizing approach is leading us toward a world of staggering energy inefficiency, ecological collapse, and, you know, armed AI, how do we actually change the way we think? Because pointing out that the boxes we've built are dangerous is easy, but figuring out how to dismantle them is the real challenge.
Well, to reintegrate technology with the natural world,
yeah,
we first have to fundamentally change how we view the human mind itself.
Yeah.
We have to break down the rigid clinical barriers in how we understand our own neurobiology.
This was easily the most profound pivot in the source material for me. Because amidst all the hard data on astronomy, nuclear physics, and cybersecurity, there is this massive focus on neurodiversity and psychology.
Yeah.
And initially, you might think, okay, well, this belongs in the health or medical compartment, you know, like their article, The Hidden Struggles of Neurodiverse People. But the platform immediately smashes that wall. They take topics like ADHD and autism out of the medical realm and connect them directly to operational success.
For decades, the global medical and psychiatric establishments have operated in a very strict echo chamber, where conditions like ADHD or autism spectrum disorder were viewed exclusively through a clinical lens of deficit.
Right, something's broken.
Exactly. The goal was always to manage, medicate, or correct these neurodivergent individuals to fit a standard normal behavioral baseline.
They were viewed as problems to be fixed so the person could function in a traditional office or classroom.
But when you eradicate the barrier between the medical field and the fields of emergency management, cybersecurity, or complex systems engineering, a totally different reality emerges. You realize that what the medical establishment labeled a deficit is, in many contexts, a highly specialized evolutionary adaptation.
Let's dig into the actual mechanism of that, because the biology here is just fascinating. Thinkiverse has this great FAQ. How does ADHD improve focus in emergencies? Take ADHD, for example. In a standard, non-stimulating environment like sitting at a desk doing repetitive paperwork, an ADHD brain struggles because it generally operates on lower baseline levels of dopamine.
Yes. The executive function, the part of the brain responsible for planning and focus, is essentially understimulated.
But introduce a massive crisis, a system failure, a cybersecurity breach, a true emergency. In a neurotypical brain, a sudden crisis causes a massive spike in cortisol,
which induces stress, panic, and often a narrowing of cognitive ability. People just freeze up.
But in the ADHD brain, that sudden high-stakes emergency doesn't just produce paralyzing cortisol. It provides a massive, instantaneous surge of dopamine.
It's incredible.
That crisis provides the exact chemical hit required to fully engage their prefrontal cortex. The emergency literally medicates their brain into a state of profound clarity and hyperfocus. While the neurotypical brain is overwhelmed by the chaos, the neurodivergent brain is suddenly operating at peak, optimized efficiency, able to process rapid, high-stakes information and make split-second connections.
It is an evolutionary superpower designed for survival in chaotic environments. And it's the exact same principle with autism and deep subject immersion. Thinkiverse asks, how does autism enhance deep subject immersion? And how can organizations create inclusive workplaces for neurodivergent individuals?
Right.
Because when we are facing the incredibly complex cross-disciplinary problems we've been talking about, like mitigating the alignment risks of artificial intelligence or solving the thermodynamic puzzle of green energy without destroying the biosphere, we cannot rely on conventional linear thinking.
We desperately need the cognitive architecture that autism provides.
Yes. We need the capacity for relentless deep subject immersion. The ability to hyper-focus on vast arrays of data, to identify intricate patterns and systemic connections that a neurotypical brain simply filters out as background noise.
So by trying to force everyone to think the exact same way, to medicate or train everyone to fit into the same standard neurotypical box, we have literally been throwing away our most potent cognitive tools. We have been ignoring the natural biological solutions to our own organizational and technological problems.
It perfectly mirrors the agricultural sector ignoring the bad. Whether we are talking about an ecosystem or a boardroom, when we view diversity not as a problem to be eradicated, but as a biological optimization to be integrated, we unlock incredible potential. We have to stop trying to engineer the human element out of the equation.
That reframing changes absolutely everything, and it brings this entire journey full circle. For you listening, think about the immense ground we've covered today. We started by looking at how a 4-billion-year evolutionary R&D process gave us bats that outperform our toxic engineered pesticides.
And we explored how the profit motive blinds us to these elegant natural miracles, pushing us to burn billions of dollars and massive amounts of energy on inefficient technological workarounds like power to X.
We looked at the terrifying consequences of isolating technology from biology, resulting in the arrogance of armed robot dogs and rogue AI. And finally, we saw that the key to dismantling all of this might lie in our own neurobiology by breaking neurodiversity out of the medical clinic and harnessing the hyperfocus and pattern recognition of ADHD and autism to solve these global crises.
The evidence mapped across all these disparate fields points to one undeniable conclusion. Our survival and our ability to truly understand the universe we inhabit depends entirely on our willingness to embrace the intersections.
So, as you go through your week, I want you to look closely at your own life, your own work, and how you solve problems. Where have you built artificial borders? Are you currently banging your head against a wall, trying to aggressively engineer a complex solution to a problem, when a perfectly elegant, natural answer might be sitting just out of view in a completely different discipline? How can you look for the hidden bats to solve your own pesticide problems?
As you examine those borders in your own life, consider this final thought. If we can accept the profound reality that evolutionary biology has spent millions of years perfecting complex systems, systems that we are only now clumsily trying to replicate with synthetic chemistry and artificial intelligence, what other massive looming global crisis has a completely free, highly optimized biological solution that we are currently ignoring simply because no one has figured out how to package and sell it yet?
It really makes you wonder how many world-changing answers are hiding in plain sight, just waiting for the bell to ring so we can finally tear the walls down.